Don't forget to like, follow, subscribe, and turn on notifications so that you will receive alerts when there are new episodes. Go get it.
Been grinding for so long, I wake up and chase my goals. I go out and I go get it, hot or cold, that's all I know. I don't succeed, then I don't breathe. Success, what does it mean? If I conquer all my goals, then I'm living out my dream. Dig deep, go out and get it. Success Chronicles. Compete until it's finished. Success Chronicles. Go take care of your business. Success Chronicles. It's deeper than just winning. Success Chronicles.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Chip Baker coming to you with another episode of the Success Chronicles, and I am truly, truly excited about this one. And before I say who the person is, I want to warn you, it's going to be a good one, right? It's going to be hot. But man, I'm so excited to have Mr. Troy Kemp on with us, a great man doing some great things in education. And first, I just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to interview with the Success Chronicles.
Man, absolutely. Like I said, man, you know, it's one of those things where when you come up a certain type of way in life and people walk past you, you know, when people stop and say hello and pay attention to you, it means something, right? Sure. I try to do that for people. But when somebody wants to give you an opportunity to share something that they've seen in you for the right reason, they notice you for the right reason, you better stop and exhale and share your life, man. This is what this is.
I love it. I love it. Well, let's dive into your story. I know, you know, when we talked previously, we talked about your journey and, you know, some of the neat things that you've been blessed to achieve and accomplish. But if you don't mind just kind of sharing a little bit about, you know, your background and your journey, so the audience will have an idea of who you are and what it is you do.
Well, I appreciate that. And again, thank you for the opportunity. You know, I tell people all the time, don't let the suit fool you, man. There's a lot to it, right? Don't let the suit fool you, because you know, I'm a person that, you know, I grew up on Long Island, Riverhead, New York. That's East End of Long Island. People think of New York. I'm out there where the potato fields were. So, yeah, I'm a migrant worker. My family's from dirt road Florida, Palatka, Florida, Hastings, Florida, home of the white potato. And they were migrant workers. So they traveled seasonally. They ended up in New York with potato season. But every summer, I was a child growing up. At risk, when people say at risk is not real, that's if you're not playing in traffic. If you're playing in traffic like I did growing up, it's at risk. Crossing the street is at risk, right? Let's be real. So anyway, grew up on Long Island, but every summer I'd go to the Eastern Shore of Virginia and some other places and work as a migrant worker with my family. When we were really little, we were kind of, the babysitter was that row of tomatoes, right? You learn how to count. Forever, right?
Yes,
So it was that row of tomatoes, and we picked peppers and all that. And our family, you know, they traveled. You know, one person in my family was a cook, one person was the field walker, somebody was this. And the kids, we just, you know, we entertained ourselves with labor, right? Yeah. But you know, we lived on those labor camps, and I, you know, for maybe a month or two in the summer, and it was like going from the freezer to the oven. Living on Long Island, where you had running water this way and that way, and then going to that, down to those labor camps where you may not even have a usable bathroom, and you had the night pot, the outhouse, or something worse. So, you know, we had to learn how to navigate like craziness, right? Being around the homeless and hopeless kid, people who were addicted to a little bit of everything. But we learned the lessons of life that we probably could have never learned in a textbook pretty quickly. So we got the PhD before the high school diploma, right? It was a different order.
In life.
Right? Life, right. So migrant worker growing up, Eastern Shore, Virginia. I always, you know, I was a kid. I was raised by my aunt in New York because my mom was in college when I was born. And she thought it was best for me to live with her sister, who was stable, had a husband in New York while she was trying to finish school. When she finished school, just because you have a degree don't mean you're ready. So my mom was going to try to bring me with living with her, but she was trying to settle down. So, you know, at the end of the day, my mom said it was best for me to live with my aunt and kind of be raised with her kids and end up being raised with five boys, one girl, single parent household because her husband passed, and free lunch, food stamps on that end. You know, it was a different thing. I was blessed to I worked really hard in school. I made my bed every day, cleaned, you know, did the things that my mom, I call my aunt my mom sometimes, so I'll switch back and forth. But my mother loves me, my aunt loves me dearly. So I got a mother and a mom, right? So just to clarify, just in case y'all watching, long story short, you know, I'm doing well in school. I was small, 4'11 in the eighth grade. I grew pretty fast. Had to take a whole year off of sports in high school. And finally, I kind of grew. I was always feisty. I always had knowledge of the game. Moment came, senior year, they were trying to recruit another kid on my team, and they happened to see me. And I had the grades and the test scores and had an opportunity to go attend Colgate University and play football. And for me, you know, I wanted to be a doctor growing up, because when you little, they say, what do you want to be? I want to be a professional football player. And then you say, what else to that? I want to be a doctor. I just want to be somebody that people looked up to. And they said, you could be a doctor. You had great biology grades. You made a 99 in biology. You're great at the dissections. So I was like, I want to be a doctor. College football, yeah, it'd have been great, but I was small. But I grew. And things worked out because I had the kind of right kind of grades and the attitude at the right time. Long story short, fast forward, I go to Colgate, get a great education. I learned, you know, I actually picked that school because the combination of athletics and academics. I wanted an Ivy League kind of education, but I wanted the football experience to be able to play in front of 50,000, play against Syracuse and Duke and folks like that. I said, why not have both? So I decided to do that, but I also went to that school because the people represented 180-degree culture shift from what I grew up with. And I said, you know, you learn Spanish and French and Latin in high school. You got to learn how to speak success. Get all around the people who are making moves and printing the money and shifting the money and investing, and people whose money is making money for them. And they will teach you how it's done. The language of success may not be the one you speak in your house, but it's the one you need to speak to move forward. Right? So I went to Colgate to become bilingual. I learned Penthouse. That's another language, Penthouse. So I went to Colgate to learn how to speak Penthouse. I lived my life. I already knew how to speak outhouse. So now I can operate anywhere between. I'm thankful for that experience because I got all, I was like a sponge. I got all of that out of there. And the scariest part is when I went off to college, and this is an awakening moment because everybody's life has inflection points. When I went off to college, I was red hot, straight A student. Everybody's like, you're going to be the president. You know, when I was being recruited by colleges, they would come through. And I never forget, on signing day, this guy's got this pen. He's popping it. Come on, let's go. Let's go. Let's sign. And all of a sudden, I hadn't heard. I had applied to Ivy League schools, too. And my guidance counselor said, hold up. You haven't heard from those schools yet. Isn't that what you wanted your whole life, to go to Ivy League school? And I said, yeah. Well, she said, well, give me an hour. Let me go call these people and find out what the heck's going on. That woman went in there, and I don't know what she did, but she found out my decision earlier than it was supposed to be. Because she told those schools, she said, this young man's going to be gone if you don't. This lady paid for my college. She paid for my college applications. This lady filled out my financial aid forms. It was a bunch of zeros, but still, she filled it out because I didn't know what I was doing, and I had no one in my family that could help me with that. This woman was another mom, so now I got three mamas. No daddy, but three mamas, right? That's all good because I was covered. Had a principal that took care of me, too. He took me on a recruiting trip to the college. So I got people looking out for me. And the reason why I'm sharing all this, I know I'm not doing it in chronological order, but it's in impact order, right? These people turned around and they saw a vision for me that I never knew existed. They knew it was on the other side of the hill. They said, just get there. I promise you, it's going to be golden when you get there. You got more in you than anybody that we've seen come through this school at any time. Matter of fact, I'm a co-sign because I'm going to write these checks to make sure you can apply. I'm going to take every obstacle out of the way so you can run, not walk. I go to these schools with that kind of wind in my sails, and I'm rolling, man. I'm good to go. And I get in that school, and I don't even know what college really is. I didn't have to go to a summer program because my test scores are so high. So I didn't get an on-ramp to college. I get in there, I take my first math test. I was in an advanced calculus because I had already passed the APs and all that stuff. So I had AP credits. So I move into the sophomore and the junior level courses. And let me tell you something, long story short, when that first semester was about to end, I thought I was going to fail out. I said, here I am, Mr. President, about to fail out of college. And what happened is I overslept on my biology exam my first semester. And I remember staying up late because I was cramming. I said, I got to get this because I'm not going to come back. And I'm worried about embarrassing my whole family, right? I mess around to oversleep. I go over to the test. The guy goes, you can't take the test. He said, you can't take the test now. It's too late. I'm literally crying because I said, I just failed, not myself. I failed the world. People who believe I was going to be one that made it. I go back to my dorm and I literally did this. I had my old raggedy car that I had bought. It cost $1,000, but the insurance was $2,000. That tell you how bad it was. It was, hey, listen, man, I was so broke that here's what I did. When I came up to college, I drove the car to college, and then I convinced the people to let me park it in the back lot, and I turned the insurance off. I cut the insurance off and put a cover over it and hid it, and then it was time to go home at Christmas. I reactivated the insurance and drove home. That's what I did, man. But hey, man, look here, man. One thing, being a migrant, helped me be resourceful. So anyway, I pulled my car up to the lady, to the thing, and I said, ma'am, I go to the dean's office because the dean's office is below my dorm. I'm thinking I failed out of college. I go in the dean's office. I said, I think her name was Sally. Miss Sally, I want to thank you for taking a chance on me. It's not that I don't appreciate it. I just misread the whole situation, and I'm sorry. She said, what's wrong, TK? I said, well, I overslept my biology exam and ain't no way I'm going to pass. And that means I'm going home. I know it. And I got to deal with it. So I went up to the room. I parked my car in the student park. I wasn't supposed to park there. You're not supposed to park in the parking. They tow you. I said, tow it. Whatever y'all want to do. I ain't coming back anyway. Give me a ticket. So I tell her I'm gone. I go up to my room and I pack up my stuff. I mean, I pack it all up because I said, I ain't coming back. And I ain't had much. I had a Foot Locker, a blanket, a lamp I made at wood shop, and something else. I put it all in my car, and I'm getting ready to close the trunk, and the lady said, you're in luck. I said, what? She said, I talked to the science professor. She said, if you get over there right now, he'll let you take the exam. So I run over there, man, and my leg halfway asleep. I run over. I said, I'm going to leave my car. She said, I'll take care of it. And I took the exam, and I never forget, I got like a 2.22 GPA, and that was enough to get through. But what that did is that woke me up because I realized that, you know, boys don't respond to smoke. They only respond to fire. And even people who have an aptitude need to adjust their attitude to understand how to show gratitude, but to move things forward. And for me, that's how I blew it. I woke up and the fire burned me. Don't touch that. You tell a kid don't touch it, they do that until that socket shocks them or the fire burns them, and they go, I ain't never going to do that again. We learn by failure. So I learned by almost failing because I felt like I did. And that was enough adrenaline and momentum and fear to motivate me to do the things the right way. Fast forward, I go through, I have the best semester I ever had right after that. You know, football, I start watching film and adjusting. I play college football. I graduated from Colgate, and they did a good job of job search stuff. So I had all these job offers, and I remember Procter & Gamble was the one to have. I got an offer for Procter & Gamble. I think they said they interviewed 5,000 people, and I went in there talking the game with them. So they like, we like you. And on my resume, I had owned and operated a haircutting business to pay personal expenses. So I was a barber on campus, and I put it on my resume. But out of all the internships and everything else I had, they want to talk about that. You want to know why? They said, everybody can tend to fire, but who can create fire? Learning how to create something from nothing. I learned a valuable lesson that the creators are the ones that get the next thing. I was trying to do something with what I had to be resourceful. So they said, let's go. I want that guy. Right? Long story short, got great job offers. Somebody literally told me, hey, won't you go in there with Chris McBride? You all dressed up like this. We're doing interviews for Educational Resources Group. I said, I don't want to teach. I've been broke before. Why do I want to be broke again? They said, go in there and talk to Chris. He's a great guy. I go in there and talk to Chris Bryan. He changed my life. This man talked to me about teaching. I said, I don't have an education degree. He said, in a private school, you don't have to have it. He said, you can coach, you can teach, you just finished playing football. I was like, I don't want to be a teacher, but this sounds great. So I turned around. Can you hear me still? Can you hear me? Yes.
Yes, sir.
So I turned around and Chris McBrien brought, I went in there with Chris and he talked to me about teaching. And I said, well, he said, you don't even have to apply to schools, apply to us and we will shop for you. So he was my agent. He said, schools are going to love you because you can teach math. You can do computer science. You're a football guy. You love kids. You got good energy. They're going to love that. He said, on top of it, you're African-American male. So you know how that's going to go. And I said, okay. So long story short, I interviewed at one school because I didn't have time because I had other job offers on the line. I told them I would teach because I said, you know what? When I visited the school and they had me teach a class, they said, you don't have to teach math. Teach them anything you want to teach them because we want to know how you connect with students. I said, I can teach them how to make French toast. He said, yes. I said, I'm going to teach them something else. But when I went in that class and it gave me life.
Gave you life.
And
you
know. And I said, mm-hmm. Me sharing and moving, it was on a seesaw. And it was like, this was amazing. And I told my mama, I said, Mom, I want to do this. She said, boy, are you crazy? Why would you do that? You're going to turn down all this money. You're going to have a six-figure job in 5 years if you do this job. I said, Mom, if they want me now, they'll want me. I'll be better than I used to be. I said, I'm going to get a roommate. School offered me a job. I sent them a spreadsheet. I said, I need to know every expense for everything, including car insurance, and I need a roommate or I can't make it. Got me a roommate. Boom, we all good. I go there, teach at the Wilmington Friends School in Wilmington, Delaware, and it was a Quaker school. And I went there. They said, you don't have to wear a tie. You can wear jeans. You can wear whatever. And I connected real well with the kids. I coached football, lacrosse. I was a computer coordinator and a math teacher for $17,500. I ain't gonna lie. I was like, what? I was a blue light special, right? But what happened is I'm doing that. And all of a sudden I met my wife and had a son. And I said, I can't do that for $17,500. So what I had to do is call my man, Chris at ERG again. And I got back in the hunt, and that's how I ended up in Chattanooga because they gave me housing, they changed my salary, and they gave us a community. So I ended up with 27 years at the Macaulay School. I taught math. I was a dorm parent. Then after that, I moved to admission. I became the dean of admission and financial aid, and then ultimately associate head of school for enrollment and marketing. Right. So associate head of school. And then when I was associate head of school, I was in charge with moving the needle with enrollment. Now, again, creating fire. They said, we need you to go to Atlanta and we need you to get the, we're in Chattanooga, but Atlanta's 2 hours away. We need to get this thing going in Atlanta. Everybody was like, they got great schools in Atlanta. Why? How can we make a move in there? Because why would they pay money for us twice as much and they got great schools? And I said, they don't have our school. They said, what do you mean? I said, what do we do best, man? We a boys school. We're a men's store. When I go to a men's store, I know I'm going to get the fabric and everything I want. When I go to the department store, it might not have my size. They may run out of my size. And I said, but here's the thing. This woman invited me, his mom invited me to talk in Atlanta. And she said, you can't go recruiting people because these folks ain't going for that. I said, she said, talk about boys. Talk about what you know about boys and what they know, what they need and how they learn and what you learned as a dad, blah, blah, blah. Man, I went down there, had 230 people in there, standing room only. So what I learned is that even people with money don't feel safe with their child. Because this world is hostile and boys, because their brain develops later, will do some things that are counterproductive and detrimental if left unstructured, right? Long story short, we create the National Center for the Development of Boys. Let's make it national. And I said, I love this because I work at a private school, but I want to serve the kids across the street too, the ones who can't get in. I said, if the neighborhood, if our yard has green grass and my neighbor's grass is brown and burnt up, that neighborhood ain't worth nothing. So we got to make sure the neighborhood looks good. Let's take care of public purpose. So anyway, due to the National Center for the Development of Boys, we created a nonprofit and we almost hired a person, but he backed out at the last minute. And I said, I'll move for my role as associate head of school and be the leader of the National Center. So they said, who would do that? I would, because I'm that kid. And my brother, you know, one of my cousins slash brothers, he went to jail when I was 15 because my way to highway didn't work for him. And schools always said that he was no count. I said, teachers are misunderstanding people. Dude, if you're misunderstood, you'll be mismanaged. And if you're mismanaged, you'll misbehave. Facts. So what are we going to do to upgrade the scout report so that our game plan is informed? That's what's up. Am I right? Okay.
Come on.
So ultimately, the National Center was to be able to upgrade the scouting report so that people can have an informed game plan so they can move with precision. Listen, when you cook something, you read the label. You don't just throw it in the pan. It might need to go in the refrigerator instead of the oven. So let's see what we're doing, right? So for me, National Center, we created the National Center, and we were moving. I'm going all around the country speaking, talking to law enforcement agencies, judges. I'm talking to coaches. I'm trying to make sure we're responsible in how we interact with these young men, because 85% of discipline problems are boys and 85% of incarcerated youth are boys, and let's keep it moving. Folks, if we don't play offense, we're going to play a whole lot of defense. So National Center, I was out there trying to play offense and helping people upgrade their expertise. Came to Ron Clark and spoke at Ron Clark because I said, I need to speak in front of a crowd so I can make a hype video because I want the world to know that people are interested in this and you got a great facility. I spoke down here and Miss Bearden heard me, who was a co-founder of the school, heard me speak, and she had just adopted three boys from South Africa. See, I got three boys in my life now. I want to hear what you got to say about this and other people who wiggle. And she said, this man can add value to educators around the nation. And we have 10 to 15,000 educators come here every year for training. This man needs to be here when they get here so he can share with them. So when they go back, they can upgrade what's going on at their schools. Join our team, man. Pick a jersey. Get on the roster. And I was like, I got a life. I got a great life. I got a house and everything in Chattanooga. But here's what I learned. And I didn't talk about this. But when God say move, move. Because for me, getting recruited by Colgate, taking that job at Friends and being able to move from there to Chattanooga, having a son even at 23 years old when I wasn't ready to do all that, shaped me. God says, I'm going to put something in your life. I'm going to put a wall right here so you can see the window over there. That's what I'm going to do. And what I learned is trust God. Let's go with it. I don't claim to be perfect in any way, but all I know is that God is using me because I can't explain why I end up in the right place for the right person at the right time. So for me, I know that's a long version of it, but that's how I ended up at the Ron Clark Academy, because God said, move, move. And where I am now is this. If the water is flowing this here, right over here, my goal is to put some vitamins in the water so the people get it. I got to go where the water's flowing, and I'm where the water is flowing right now.
So good.
I don't know. I'm sorry, man. Hey, I'll be getting going, hey, man.
Hey, I got one word in response to your journey and your story that you just said, and that word is boom. Let's go, man. Yeah,
right. I mean, but you know, when you say, you think about it, you know, it's a lot of pieces, right? And I know you talk about life story and my career and my calling. I'm fortunate that they've intersected, right? See, here's what I know. When I think about speaking in the lives and sharing information, tomorrow we have, you know, a couple, you know, 600 educators coming here to get professional development. And one thing I know is that if I didn't lose a brother to the law enforcement, I wouldn't understand them people. If I didn't have to get on my knees and work in the field beside people who were homeless, who had college degrees, I wouldn't understand it. I'm one decision away from the worst thing in my life, that I'd be smart about my discipline. If I didn't have to use food stamps in college and be afraid that people were going to show up when I'm spending my money at the register, I wouldn't understand what that piece feels like. If I wouldn't have had a son at the right time, then I probably would have had 16 kids like my daddy too, by all these different people. Who knows? If I didn't move to Chattanooga, Tennessee, think about it. I'm a boy raising a man. who didn't grow up with a father trying to be a father. Now I go to a boys' school where I got to be a father to hundreds of boys, which means I got to exemplify what I'm trying to get them to do. So it caused me, yeah, I'm out here putting a stick down for the tomato plant to grow, but I didn't realize in the process of putting that stick down, it's straightening my back too. Walk in a certain way. You don't move people if they don't. They got to see what the target looks like. Can't nobody hit a target they can't see. And then when people expect something of you, and success is contagious, just like quitting is contagious. So when you start having success in certain things, you do more of that. So now I'm teaching. I didn't realize that God said, man, teach, share things, because you can translate math. You can make math interesting and fun. You can make kids want to come to your class. I had kids who thought they were allergic to algebra, and now they're engineers. Because the stories that I used to help, I talked about rock fights to help kids understand exponents, man. I talked about me and my buddies getting on both sides of the little river thing and throwing rocks at each other. And it was like, if you got seven guys over here and you got five over here and y'all throwing rocks, y'all gonna cancel each other out, right? So they started to understand how exponents cancel each other out. And they were like, whoa, rock fight. When they forgot it all, rock fight. I got it, coach. And I said, if it takes that kind of language to get it to stick and for them to be able to translate it and move on and sustain it, I'll speak any language you need, man. That's my game. My game is, I don't claim to be the greatest researcher and all that, but what I am is a translator. I'm a translator. I'm going to break that thing down to the bite size that you need. I'm going to cut that thing up and slice it up, turn it around and saute it, put some seasoning on it. And my goal is to make this education thing taste good, right? They say, you know, when you look at something new in a familiar way, they call that deja vu. I see something new, it looks familiar. What I'm focused on is vujade. When you see something familiar and it looks new. I want them, the thing they've been looking at the whole time, the obstacle, I want them to see the opportunity. I want them to see this boy who they weren't looking forward to seeing and say, I can't wait to see you. Listen, kids are in one room, in one classroom, in one household, they're notorious, but they're amazing around the corner. Why is that kid taking the trash out at his friend's house, but he won't take it out at your house? There's something. If you understand that dynamic and why they do it, leverage that to move it in your own crib. You just got to back up and see enough of it to see the patterns, man. Sometimes people so close to it, they can't see the opportunity. So guess what? That's why you got somebody in the press box on the football field. The coach on the field can't see with the press box, but you got to trust the one in the press box or it's a wrap.
Man, hey, Doc, I warned him when we started. I warned him it was gonna be hot.
Hey, man, listen, man, I'm just saying, I get excited because,
yes, sir,
this is my life, like my life, yeah. My career, my calling, and verse, and my life. Like, I can, you know, I'm working on a book, and it'll be out like in June. If I, it's gonna be called Bujade because it's all about what we need to see for kids to be what they need to be, right? Yeah. We literally have got to see something different if we want to get something different out of them.
That's awesome. Well, you hit on this magic word when you talked about your journey, that word success, all right?
Yeah.
What is your definition? Well, let me go back. All the things that you've been blessed to do and how you give back in the manner in which you do it, I will consider that to be hugely successful. So what is your definition of success?
I think the success and significance are linked for me because, you know, sometimes people, it's all about measurables, right? Your legacy and your receipts. I think success is if what I do elevates the life of somebody else, I've been successful. If what I do is sustainable without me, I've been successful. So yes, You know, I was able to I was recently inducted in the Hall of Fame for lacrosse, which is a sport I didn't even play growing up, right? But it was never about lacrosse. It was about the kids. It was about connection. It was about trust. And I'm gonna study the game, but getting people to play fast is about trust, not about X's and O's on paper. But that is an accomplishment that for me. But the success for me, for example, is the fact that all those kids got to play in college because they were part of my team, and that their aspirations, I helped them reach their goal. So success is for me is my ability to build the capacity that I can help somebody get to another level. It could be my own kids, somebody in my family. It could be somebody around the corner. Significance is linked to the same thing, is because if I didn't show up to work today, and if I wasn't around, would anybody need me or miss me for anything? Does it matter if I was around? And it's not about that anybody loved me. I don't mean that. It means that if did I leave a body of work? Did I build a bridge? Did I create something that was essential moving forward? So significance is what role are you playing? I had significant people in my life that helped me get to my success. I went back to college and got a second degree. You know, I went to Vanderbilt at 50 years old, man. And let me tell you something, 50 years old, my brain, I was like, what? One of my greatest accomplishments, I'm more proud of that degree than my Colgate degree. Because our Colgate degree, I'm proud of it. I love Colgate. But the fact is, I almost quit on the Vanderbilt degree. I said, I don't need it. I don't need it. This is tough. You know, life was in the middle of COVID and all this stuff. But to me, success for me is when I left the Macaulay School after 27 years, the alumni created a scholarship called the Kemp Scholarship. They created a scholarship for a kid to get a full ride to that school. But they have to be a kid that needs financial aid. Needs it. Not they got a warrant. That means their family does not have the means. So there's a profile of a kid. He needs financial aid. And then they dedicated they renovated a whole wing and apartment, and they call it the Kemp apartment. I'm a black man with my name on the wall of a private school in the South. That was not my goal. A lot of people put success as this was my goal. My goal is to have significance and to do the best I can. I tell people my goal every day is to wake up, is to go to bed tired and proud. Go to bed tired and proud. If I'm tired because I wore myself out doing the best I can, proud because I did it for somebody other than me. That is how I link it. Every goal should be aspirational, but it should be attainable. So when you ask me about definition of success, it is. You have to have a goal, but really more importantly, you have to have a goal and you got to move towards that to achieve that goal. But it's really about, in my mind, the target keep moving anyway. Like I'm not like, there is no destination. We talk about life as a journey, not a destination. And that's what I mean by success, because sometimes people see success as a destination. When I was a classroom teacher for 17.5, I was having plenty of success. I got to be the commencement speaker my second year there. I was a second year teacher. Shoot, somebody like DuPont's or Darlin was speaking before me. They said, what are you going to put a 22-year-old up in front of all these famous people for? And it wasn't that. It was because of my ability to connect with the kids. My success is linked to other people's. If they fail, I'm not successful. That's how it gets down. That's how I get down. I don't even know where that came from, but that's what it is.
Yeah.
And having a son that feels the same way.
You know, just, you know, as you said, like, you know, I'm thinking like as far as where it came from, and I'm just sitting here like looking and listening to your passion, right? And I'm listening to you discuss your journey, and you talk about all of the experiences that you've been blessed to have and learn from,
right?
Right. But I think it's that way, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, because you know what it felt like for somebody to pour into you. And
So, yes. And you know, givers create givers.
come on.
And they say being a leader, you know, there's a lot of qualities of a leader, but the number one quality is empathy. And so, and to develop empathy, there's three ways. You can read books or whatever from an author's perspective that's not like your own. You can spend time with people that are different than yourself, or you can also care for people that are more vulnerable than you. And you become more empathetic because you care for a 2-year-old, they break the cookie, they're gonna cry all day. You got to get on their level. And so you got to empathize with them. And I do think that I have, there's two things. Like I have had success and I appreciate the people who put me first in some way to make sure that I was safe and successful and that I didn't have to worry, right? So, and then I seen the people who didn't get that treatment, right? I'm on the first class eating and people back there starving. And so what do? You go back there and you figure out, and I say, you know, I'm gonna get to altitude so I can see this world from enough of an angle to figure out how this pit fits together. And I'm coming back. But when I come back, I'm gonna have my sword and shield. And I'm gonna fight for you. And I'm good that because that energy never runs out. I can run out of energy running a mile, but running a race to help somebody live, have a better life, your legs don't get tired. And I tell people, you don't have to use your engine for everything to move. You got to be like a plane. You got to glide sometimes. And where you glide is the breeze, is the things that lift your spirit. See, you feed your soul just like you feed your family. And things that feed your soul regenerate the energy. That regenerates like a Tesla, man. You driving and your battery getting charged. That's the kind of thing that I've been fortunate that God has put in my life and put me in a spot where that thing is happening every day. I mean, it's 9 o'clock at night and I feel like I'm ready to run a race right now because this conversation is exciting to me that somebody out there that this story might connect to, and the person that may choose job X to have success in one way is really missing the point that job Y is the one that's going to give you the most success, the real thing. That's me. Like I feel blessed. People say to me all the time, because I run into people and things happen. And somebody said, you need to write all this down. And I said, why? They said, well, the Bible ain't up with a bunch of stories, man. You got a lot of stories that's happening. Ain't you're just chronicling these moments that are happening that you can't explain why they're happening to you, but what they're doing for other people. The intersection, the crossroads. God keep putting me at the crossroads and stuff. This young lady tonight just signed with Vanderbilt, brother. And I remember the private school was all backed off on the money. Well, we don't really give people much money. I said, well, let me ask you this. I said, you don't even know who's applying yet, but I do. And I said, I know a young lady that's going to change your school forever, not only with her talent, but with her attitude and how she affects people. She's going to change your school forever. Now, if your policy says you only give 75%, then that's fine. I respect that. But I'm gonna tell her to apply somewhere else because I don't want to break this baby's heart. I'd at least rather be honest. And the lady said, don't you dare do that. Let her apply. I said, okay, we'll see what happens next. Bottom line is that child just signed with Vanderbilt and she might be an Olympian one day. But the point is, the room was full of people who had nothing to do with track and field because of the light that she creates, the circle of the ripple that she creates, the lifting that she does that has nothing to do with the sport she plays. See, that's what, so being able to turn on my light and say, you may not trust her, but you trust me because I was one of you, and now you're looking at my light. So I'm a, you know what? That's what we do, right? That right there, that light symbolizes what I'm trying to be, man. I'm trying to be light because everybody ain't gonna get through. But I got to get, I got to, listen, you can take the stairs or you can take the elevator in life, man. You can get to the top four, but even if you get there, some people are going to be exhausted. My goal is to get there and get the keys so I can take the elevator down to get some more people. And then build another elevator. So now I teach them how to create. That's the jam with me. That's migrant work has taught me that. Make something out of nothing, man. You can always do something. This doesn't dictate my pace of play. Because when we were out there, we worked from start to whenever we had to knock off. It wasn't 5 to 9 to 5. It was do it to do it. And I said, you know what? I was born and raised in that fire, man. And the hottest fire make the strongest steel, man. This God has given me the stress inoculation to allow me to walk through this thing. And you know what? I'm going to do everything I can. Every door I go in, every room I go in, I'm going to move this thing for somebody. And success is there, but there's, you know, obviously there's some elements to, if I ask myself, I back up, I say, what are the keys, right? I know that was one thing that we were going to discuss, right? Like, what do you have to have, right?
Yes, sir.
To me, I know God had his hand in it, but let's just talk about the things on this earth. Self-discipline. You know, I made my bed every day. My brother was like, hey, man, we ain't going to make the bed. We're going to stick it all up under the bed. I said, we're going to clean the room. He said, we're going to shove it all under the bed. What about, that ain't going to work. He said, we're going to stick it all in the closet. And I said, mama going to come in here and tear our butts up because we ain't do it right. So let's just do it right the first time. He said, man, you always trying to do it all. No, I'm not. I just don't want to get no butt whooping. But my point is, a lot of people in this world never say what if. See, if you're hopeless and fearless, you're in trouble, right? Because you don't fear nothing and you don't have a vision for what could be different than what your life is. So you're going to do anything. So in order to have success, self-discipline is crucial. But if you don't have self-discipline, you got to have structure. See, this is why a lot of kids are more successful during in school, academics, during football season and sports season, because they got structure and there's expectations and they don't have time to waste. They got to go to bed, get up. They got regimen. So if you don't have self-discipline, you have to have structure. The other thing is you have to have people in your life. You got to have resources. You have to have resources where, because what you got, everybody talk about, I'm a self-made man. I'm a just, no, you're not. No, you're not. There ain't a person out here that did it all themselves. There was always somebody somewhere. Maybe you forgot about the moment because somebody had to see you differently at some point. But growth mindset. You got to believe that you can get better. You got to know that you can get better because otherwise you'll stop moving and you'll be dissatisfied or you will be so afraid to fail that your value is linked to your ability. My value was never linked to my ability because I love growing up more like David than Goliath. Looking at the hill from the bottom, that'll teach you something. Ain't no way up but climbing. If you grow up in the middle of the top, the first way to move may be down. I think you got to have that. I think you also, for me, I think that you got to understand, and I always say upgrade your expertise. You got to have awareness. Like it's important to be able to read. Like if I said, if I could go back in time, one thing I'd do is I'd read more. Because I'm like, the more I read, the more I learn and the more I think differently when I read things. But being able to read is one thing, but being able to read the room is everything. You have to have enough courage to put yourself in places where people are better than you and not and different than you are. Because the variety of personalities and thought processes and perspectives help you grow as fast as anything else. Like I said, I learned to speak penthouse at Colgate. That was not in the textbook. That was in the people around me. You got to become bilingual in life languages, right? Just like if you go to New York City and you don't have no, you got a $20 bill and you know that some Subway takes dollar bills, you got to be like, well, I'm not going to ask a stranger to for change because they're going to hit me over the head and take my money. I'm going to go into Starbucks or somewhere and buy something, cheapest thing I can buy, and get my change and going on down there and spend myself. That's reading the room and understanding the situation. But if you ain't never been there, you the one bopped in the head laying on the corner on the 7 o'clock news. But the penthouse people will bop you in the head too if you don't do it right. See, it's called a ceiling. When they talk about the glass ceiling, I've never in my life had somebody deny me something because of what I look like. How about that? Now I've had people treat me some kind of way, but not deny me an opportunity. Oh, you know, some people are like, I didn't get the job because I'm black. I didn't get the head coach because I'm black. Honestly, I've never had it happen because I've never tried for something in that way because people came to me and said, I want you to be the dean of admission. Will you do it? Will you run the center? Will you come to the Run Club Academy? I never applied for a job other than the first with that first one. And then the second ones were pretty easy because I had the receipts. To be successful, you got to collect receipts. It takes receipts. It takes proof and evidence because people who don't know you like that, you got to be relatable and reliable. And reliability comes with receipts. And so for my life's work, I got receipts that say, this man is an investor in lives and receipts. This man cares about people. This man will stay up late and get up early for somebody else. And this man has got the degrees now and all the rest. The degree was a receipt, man. I learned things at Vanderbilt, but it was really a receipt for the people in a, who, if I wanted to be a head of school, they'd not turn around and say, yeah, but. Oh, no, 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 no. You get things two ways, fuel and friction. Add fuel, motivate, incentivize, friction, take away the thing they're scared of. When I give you the degree, you ain't afraid that I ain't qualified. You done took that off the table. Now you can't say nothing. That's the yeah, but. I'm going to take the word but out of vocabulary, man. It's going to be yeah, not but. Come on.
So good.
I know this probably went a total wrong way. I apologize, man.
No. Hey, I warned him when we started it was going to get hot, so we good.
Hey, man, he got me going here, man. I don't even know what I'm going to do with myself. But this is where I was a college athlete, man. This thing don't die. The spirit don't die.
Yes, sir. So good. Well, as we close, I'd love for you to get an opportunity to share with the audience where they can go follow you, check you out, and show you some love with all the amazing things you got going on.
Well, my website is troykempspeaks.com. And that's just T-R-O-Y-K-E-M-P speaks.com. And there's some resources on there, including a white paper called Understanding Boys in the 21st Century, some different podcasts, some different media that you can use. And then my Instagram and Twitter are at TF, F as in Frank, TF Kemp Sr., right? There's a TJ Kemp. That's my son. He's out there. He's interesting too. Now when people ask me what I do, instead of saying being an educator and a speaker and a coach, there's a lot of things, Father. You know, I just tell them I'm a hope dealer. And it gets their attention because they go, you a what? I say, I'm a hope dealer. And I said, you are too. Because ultimately, when you think of people in their trajectory in life, the number one key factor in being successful is having hope. And you may have a literacy gap and a language, math gap and all those, but the biggest gap we have in society is a hope gap. And the way to close the hope gap is the first thing you gotta do is people have to be stabilized in terms of their needs, basic needs, food, shelter, and everything. But the next piece is they gotta feel like they belong somewhere. And as soon as they feel like they belong and they're safe psychologically and they got love and membership, if every boy and every girl had a crew and a cause, we wouldn't have these problems. They don't have a crew and a cause. That's why they join the gangs and stuff. So at the end of the day, when you have those things, Maslow's hierarchy need, when you are your own self-advocate and have self-efficacy and you believe and you have hope, you'll keep climbing. Hope's not a plan, but it'll help you stick to it, right? But it's linked to faith too.
Come on.
If I ain't got hope, I got faith. And by faith, you walk by your faith, not by your sight. But the same thing is with hope. I can't see what I'm like in 30 years. When they ask me about my job, and I know we're about to close, when they ask me about my job, on a job interview, the guy said, first time somebody says, well, what are you going to be doing in 5 years? I was like, you know what? Nobody's really asked me that before, because I've always tried to make it to the next 5 minutes or maybe the next 5 days. When you grow up in a household where your bills, you're going month to month, day to day, week to week, sometimes meal to meal, you don't have that ability to look down the road. And so sometimes people say, why you're hopeless and you don't have vision. You know, I think they call that far-sighted, where you can't see far, near-sighted, one of them, where you can't see that way. But all I know is that a lot of our families, a lot of our kids are walking around looking at their shoes, the tips of their Jordan, so they're not creased, right? But that's a metaphor for how they look at life. They're just looking at the short term and not the long term. And it wasn't until people were asking me that on a job interview, what does the next 5 years look like? So once they said that, I had to start thinking about being around, first of all, more than a year. And how am I going to build? Let me tell me 5 years, I'm thinking about five rungs on the ladder. Boop, 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 boop. I don't plan on being in the same position now that I am 5 years. No, sir. But how many people ask kids that when they're younger? They might say, well, you want to be when you grow up. That's big. But a 15-year-old, what do you want to be doing when you're 23? What do you want to be doing after college? What do you want to be doing? What do you want to be doing 2 years from now? We have a short-term mindset, and that's the shift. So for me, my ultimate goal is to help people shift their mindset so they can shift their outcomes. Hence the Bujah Day.
I love that. Well, again, I just want to say thanks so much for taking the time to interview and drop some hot nuggets on us.
Man, I don't even know what I dropped. You can listen, if you ask me to say all that mess again, I hope you can chop it up and make something that works out of it.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do that.
I'm appreciative, man. Like I said, I appreciate you, man. Like I said, I am honored to have people who believe in what I believe in, but also believe in my ability to share it in a way that's going to connect to some people. If there's one person,
yes,
who whose life changes from this, that's what's up.
Well, I'm gonna say this too. I'm gonna say thank you for being on the interview, but then I'm gonna also say thank you for doing what you do and how you do it, right? Because like all of them little boys that you talked about, like in what they do, like that's my story, right? And so I've lived that same thing as a educator, longtime educator. I've seen those same things, and the same passion is. Why I do what I do is I know what it feels like to have somebody to believe in you. I know what it feels like to have somebody that loves you, even when you think you're not worthy of that, right? And so, man, I want every kid that I come in contact with to have that feeling. That's my goal, like, right?
That's right.
That's my drive. Right.
You know what? They got to see. Here's what, you know, I told some people this one time, and I'll close with this. Quick story. I'm on a golf course, and I'm playing with this group of guys. The fraternity's called Sigma Pi Phi. They call them Boule. They're like the talented. They, you know. So I'm in that group, right? First of all, that was another big honor to be recognized and selected for that group, because I would have never thought I'd be in that group, somebody from where I'm from. So anyway, I go out to this golf course, and I'm late because I had a speech that day. So I go up to the golf course, and we're playing like group team select shot. So I said, they said, Mr. Kemp, you here? You got your golf cart right there. Y'all on hole 13. I said, okay. So I get my golf cart. They said, just go around here, blah, blah, blah. So I get on the golf course. Now, this is one of them high-end golf courses, right? So I'm driving. I don't know where I'm going. And I said, oh, Lord, I don't know what to do. I'm black, and I'm on a golf course, and they ain't looking right because I'm lost. And I look like I ain't supposed to be in the first place. And I said, oh, Lord, I don't want to ask nobody because it's going to look, hey, y'all, hey. And here you go riding by, and then I ride by again. They're like, what's that guy doing? So I finally go to one hole, and I saw some guys I recognize.
I said, oh man, I'm kind of embarrassed. I can't find my group, man. I said, I can't find my hole because there's no numbers on these holes. He said, yeah, it's an honors course. They don't hold numbers. And I said, well, how are people supposed to know where to go? He said, you got to play with somebody who's already seen the course before. So what I learned about it is a metaphor for life. Look, when you have the ability, when your wings develop and you become an eagle and you become someone that has enough success, then your job is to be a navigator and show people what the course looks like. Show them how to move. Show them which stones are the ones you step on to cross the raging river. So being who we are, not only are we trying to for me, shape the what educators see so they can look at these boys, young men, and others differently, but also when it comes to the young men, how I'm walking, they're going to walk behind me. They copying everybody else's dance steps. Why don't they copy this two-step that I'm talking about called cross the river, get to the other side? That's the dance step. That's the dance move. That's the program that I want them to copy. Because you're copying everything else, TikTok dance and all that. Let me show this dance called success. That's what we need to be doing. So that golf course taught me something. God did it to me, got me lost so I can understand what I'm here for. I was lost. Somebody had to show me who played the course. So he says, Troy Kemp, you done played this course in life and you've had some success. Go back and show somebody how to get to hole number 13. That's what this is.
Man, more heat. More heat.
I'm good, man. I promise I'm done, man. But that's real. But that's real.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, thank you again. And thank you guys for checking out this episode. We'll see you next time. God bless.
Thank you.
Go get it.